Hello, and welcome to episode 218 of Relics of Or. I'm your host, Grybok, and joining me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Spirit. How are you doing this evening, Spirit?
I am doing great, because we're recording an episode, and it's been a hot minute.
Boy, a hot minute indeed. We tried to record last week, and then the servers were on fire, and then it's been 4th of July, so Murica and everything. Yeah.
I made a cheeseburger pie to celebrate America.
What?
It's just a meat pie, but you make it with like chopped up pickles and pickle juice and onions and mustard and ketchup mixed into the meat filling. And you garnish with a little bit of cheese on top. It's really good. In fact, I have leftovers in my fridge that I was supposed to eat for lunch and I forgot about, but because I forgot about them, I can eat them after this podcast, which is something to look forward to.
Boy, as someone who hates mustard, only lightly uses ketchup, and literally gags and vomits when they eat pickles, that sounds like actual Satan food. Kindly do not make that abomination for me if we ever meet in person.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah, great. Boy. Anyway, yeah, as everybody listening to this knows, there has been a new episode, which of course means that we have fresh things to talk about. Was there anything that you wanted to cover that happened in between episodes?
I did want to talk a little bit about the Blessed Refugees. Do you know anything about them?
Oh boy, do I. No, actually, I mean, I don't know anything. All I know is basically the synopsis of the situation. I had never heard of Bless, and then all I heard about Bless was that it was a hot garbage fire.
Yes, correct.
Right, and then a popular streamer, allegedly. As in allegedly popular, I hadn't particularly watched him. Talked about returning to Guild Wars 2 and really enjoying it, and then a whole bunch of people were like, hey, let's check out Guild Wars 2, because somebody likes it. Is there more to that story than that particularly?
No, but I think the takeaway from it is I was really impressed with the scale on which that happened.
Yeah.
For being in the game, I couldn't believe how many people just started pouring in. I never expected it to be that many. I mean, it's something that I think. Actually, I don't know how many MMOs you've played, but having been around the MMO community for a while, mostly Guild Wars 2, but because it's part of the larger MMO sphere, if you will. I hear about launches from other games and people come and go and play MMO, other MMOs, but I had this concept of, like, there are people who go and play the newest MMO, right? I had no idea how many there were. Holy moly, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
That just kind of like go and play the newest thing and like good for them, whatever, no judgment or anything. But when people started pouring into Guild Wars 2, I could not believe how many people there were. It was I mean, I don't spend a lot of time in Queensdale, right? But it was the second most people I've seen in Queensdale coming out of that, you know, like that starter house when you get out of the tutorial, everyone's got a little camera over their head, you run out of the house and you're like, I'm a person doing hearts now. I could not believe how many people were coming out that door. The house was so full of people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, to speak to that crowd, I think that the thing is that a lot of people really like the leveling up process of MMOs and the feeling of discovering this often quite large area, because MMOs are sort of known for being large amounts of land. And a lot of more casual MMO players just don't have the time or inclination to stick around for the end game and grinding, be it grinding raids or grinding for cosmetics in the case of Guild Wars. Mm-hmm. And coupling that with the fact that you have a lot of people who have sort of their real quote-unquote main MMO, you know, for us it's Guild Wars, for a lot of people it's WoW. There's a large number of people that will flit around and do what they consider to be sort of the most fun part of MMOs and then, you know, just peace out. Because, you know, they just don't have the time or the inclination or whatever to, you know, to dedicate literally thousands of hours to one game, right? And so it's kind of like people that buy a lot of single-player games, you know, and they don't just keep replaying them forever. They just keep buying new ones and just, like, playing the flavor of the month. But usually that crowd only gets in at launch, right? And so it was very interesting to see such a large revitalization, especially outside of any real marketing push by, you know, by Guild Wars.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was interesting, and of course, I'm sure it helped that they did have a sale running at the time of that video, which got
well,
a lot
actually,
of people.
They, I
or
don't
did they
know
put
if
one on?
They definitely put one on in response to it. They really capitalized. But to tell you like how big this was, right? They put Black Lion keys on sale. Black Lion keys go on sale once a year in March, and they put Black Lion keys on sale. I think a lot of people were coming back.
Sure.
More than we know.
I mean, yeah, that's a funny tidbit. Since I've never bought one, I've never paid attention to that. So that's a great tidbit of information, and it's probably a good barometer for that. Like you said, yeah. So it is interesting. Yeah, and I mean, as to you also said you didn't know how many MMOs I've played. I kind of don't really care to play any MMOs in the future anymore. I think I've sort mm-hmm. of run my course of Guild Wars and Guild Wars 2, and I also have neither the time nor the inclination to put a bunch of hours into another MMO, and I don't necessarily love the leveling up in a lot of other MMOs, but I do think that's like one of Guild Wars' strongest points. And so back in the day, I played some Ragnarok Online. I played Guild Wars 1, if we're going to call that an MMO, which it sort of is, sort of isn't. I have dabbled in WoW, but not a ton. I played Ion some, like up to mid-high level for a time. Back when I was waiting for Guild Wars 2 to come out, actually. And that's it, pretty much. I just, yeah. So there you go. There's my MMO rundown of experience. But anyway, yeah, it was very interesting to watch from the sidelines of you know, somebody that doesn't really have a horse in the game, but it was sort mm-hmm. of, yeah, it was very interesting. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, and I think actually, I'm sorry if I didn't get back to everybody in the mails because it's been super crazy for me. But a few people wrote me saying, "Hey, I've just come back. I found your podcast. It's really great. Are you going to record an episode?" And I was like, "Yes, yes, soon." Sometime. I really want to. Now we're here. Hopefully
here we
for
are.
A little bit. Yeah.
We have returned. Yeah. It's, well, if you listen to all 218 episodes fresh, God help you.
Oh, I could. Some people did. Some people were like, someone sent me a really nice mail like, "Hey, I'm really enjoying the episodes. What happened between episodes 43 and such and such," which you will know is the stint where we did video. I just thought that was funny, like people going all the way back and finding our long and storied and tumultuous past, because we've been through several incarnations as well.
Yeah, boy howdy. Yeah. Yeah, that's wild. but anyway, I was sort of starting to say, if you've listened to all 218 episodes, God help you, but also you'll notice that we've run out of things to talk about unless it's new content. So
yeah.
We used to do it a lot more often. And so now it's mostly whenever there's some big announcement and or new content and or.
Hey. That's a good incentive, though. If you guys want us to talk more, give us stuff to talk about, send us questions and stuff. We will talk your ear off if we have stuff to talk about.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, I mean, I can talk forever. So, anyway, was there anything else pre this episode?
I'm sure there is, but forgive me if I think about it once we're well into the episode thing, because the episode itself has been out for a while now.
Yeah,
time is happening at a rapid pace.
This is like the pre-cast cast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, the episode came out, and the servers / instances were sort of a tire fire also, which is to say there was a lot of instability, and we were planning to podcast the same day or the day after, and it was not really playable. So, but fortunately, they got that resolved in a couple of days, so no harm, no foul, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah, were you up on the details about why that was happening?
I was not, because I was really busy with other things, and it was sort of just like, well, I can't play. I'm sure they'll fix it.
Sure. I mean, there's not much to say other than I thought it was interesting that the reason they gave is the instances that they used for this chapter were much bigger than any they'd done before, and so it didn't present in testing, but when we were spinning up thousands upon thousands of these instances, it didn't turn out so well for the server.
Right. Interesting. I could see how that could happen. That's also the type of thing that's really hard to test, before it hits live. Yeah, interesting. Well, they got it sorted, so good for them. Is there I guess where do you want to start with the episode?
From the beginning.
From the beginning. I mean, do we want to do the blow by blow of the instances, or do we want to talk about the map, or do we want to talk about the new mount, or do we want to talk about the maybe not intangibles, but the things like the new frac like the not directly related things that came out with it, like the new fractal and the new Warhorn, or
Let's talk about the story instances first. I think I'd like to talk about that.
okay, cool. So correct me if I'm wrong, because I sort of played this at odd hours over the week. We start with Gorik on trial, right? Because
Yes.
he's been doing Scarab experiments on himself and others, which is real creepy, by the way. And I mean, honestly, I'm kind of I remember you sort of argue with them. And you sort of get smart ass with them, and or at least you can.
So what was your canon playthrough? How did you treat them,
I
like
did
on your?
Dignity approach,
I
if
see.
that, yeah. What did you do?
I started dignified. I was like, "Your Honor, may I please address the court?" And then Your Honor was a jerk to me, so I was like, "Listen, get your shit together, or the scarab plague is gonna ruin your town." Boom.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so if you continue with dignified, you're sort of just a smart ass lawyer. You're like, "Do you have any actual evidence of this?" And they're like, I mean he said scarabs." And then you're like, "So you're saying you have no evidence. I rest my case, Your Honor." And they're like, I mean, I'm trying to remember exactly what you say. I should look it up, but it was kind of funny, actually. I
Yeah,
felt
I
like they
did.
kind of let you have him, without much of a fight, but at the same time, it's not really supposed to be that important, so I kind of didn't care that much. But was there, I can't remember, was there a fight at the beginning of that, or was that all dialogue?
It starts out, there's a fight after it, but there's a lot of dialogue in that instance.
Yeah.
There's no fight before that. You just start at the trial.
Okay, right. That's I think part of it is that I bugged out in that like after the trial but before anything else happened, and then I couldn't log in for a couple days.
I see.
as can happen, I guess. Yeah, it looks like they don't have. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Basically, you argue technicality. You find an error in the court's process and then ask for their trust. You're just like, you did not follow the procedures and you have no evidence. Deal with it. Lawyered. Yeah. So anyway, then you go down to the docks and then they introduce that new mechanic of, well, is it? I feel like there was something similar to it in Path of Fire, but the stomping on hills, right? Except stomping on scarabs with your mount, right?
Which I was really bad at. I was like, I think it's fun to jump on the scarabs, and so I jumped on them a whole lot, and it took me a very long time. Then someone was like, "Hey, you can just use a mount and run them over." And I was like, "Gosh, damn, I'm jumping on my scarabs."
Yeah, I don't know. I need to find out. It sort of looks like from watching people in the open world, because this event's repeated in some places, it may be that the roller beetle is actually better at destroying them than other mounts. I'm not positive, though. That would be really interesting to see. It seems like it is, but maybe they're just better at it than I am. Who knows? You talk with Lord Farron, and he is like, yeah, I'm getting real serious about this. And you're like, yeah, but also it only affects humans, so maybe you shouldn't. And he's like, I'm getting real serious about this. And you're like, okay. Would you agree with my assessment that that's
yes.
pretty much how it went? Yeah. Queen Jenna will send many, many humans. You're like, maybe if you didn't, that would be better, actually. And it's like, Queen Jenna will send... That reminds me of back in Guild Wars 1. there was this... It was at least notorious among my friend group, a part where some scout like runs up and needs to tell Prince Rurik something, and the dialogue is just like, Prince Rurik! Prince Rurik! Prince Rurik! And he goes, what? And he's like, Prince Rurik! And then gives him his statement. And it sort of reminded me of that, like, okay, fine, it's fine. We're just gonna do what you said. It doesn't matter. yeah, anyway. Right, then a bunch of Awakened show up. Did you find that combat, like, it seemed pretty easy, right?
Or yeah,
is it because I'm actually, a necromancer?
I played through it a couple times because I went and did the achievements for that instance while I was kind of hoping the server for the second instance would sort itself out. What did I play on it the first time? I don't know, but I played it twice, and one time I went through it, and I was like, why was this a light year easier than the other time? And I can't remember what class. One was, I think, the easy time I had on my thief. I don't know what I decided to pick up the first time. Guys, I have too many characters. Like, it's a lot of characters. Like, a lot of them.
I'm not going to say it's a problem, but it's also not a problem.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah. That's pretty much that whole instance. It was a good starter instance, except for if it broke on you, but that's, you know, that's fine.
Did you go inside the ship after the fight?
I did not.
If you do that, there is a statue that shit talks you, basically. I was trying to think of a better way to put it, but there's a statue of Joko in the hold of the ship that just absolutely goes on. And I can't remember exactly what he said now, but it's something like he talks about the sculptor that made him and how he, I think, killed the sculptor and fed the liver to his wife. So one of the things that I really liked about this patch is it brought back kind of the Guild Wars 1 depiction of Joko more. Like, he's, as we've seen him in Guild Wars 2, he's been pretty malicious. He hasn't had that sense of humor and kind of, I don't want to say whimsical, but he had more of a personality, I think, in Guild Wars 1 than he had up until this chapter. But I think that really came out to play, like, how he is a horrible, horrible evil person, but he has a sense of humor and a sense of grandeur that's unmatched in the Guild Wars 2 universe, I guess I'll say. That's sort of the aspects of Palau Joko that I really liked. So previously, I had that mental image of the character from Guild Wars 1, but it wasn't coming up in Guild Wars 2. And I think through all the traps and stuff and all the dialogue, all the statues around the zone where he's talking about himself and how great he is, and I just love it. Like, it's very, actually, I said unmatched, but that's not entirely true, because as Guild Wars 1 players will know, he is the fierce rival of the Mad King, who is an excellent comparison to Palau Joko. Also completely deranged and terribly evil, but somehow funny at the same time, you know, as long as you're not being murdered and your liver's being fed to your significant other. So, yeah, I love that aspect of Palau Joko, and I was so happy to see it come through.
Yeah, it's definitely something that feels very Guild Wars-y. They're very menacing, but often in a humorous way. Yeah, no, that's true, and definitely the Mad King comparison is spot on. I feel like I was reading somewhere that there's a connection between them, although I cannot for the life of me remember what it was. But yeah, it's good to have him back, and I did not do that aspect during that first instance. Anyway, moving on. Oh, by the way, I did not say it at the start, but although we sort of did say what we were going to be doing, obviously, we're going to be talking about the whole episode. Spoilers, you've been forewarned. Don't listen if you care about spoilers. You know, too late, but I don't feel too bad about spoiling the first instance so far. Anyway, we go meet the primeval queens, kings, dynasty, whatever. And we basically, they're like, oh, yeah, we're not going to help you with whatever you want. And you're like, yeah, but what if we get revenge for you? And they go, oh, yeah, actually, no, that's fine. Oh, I'm down for that. It's good to know that vengeful ghosts can avenge, I guess.
Yeah.
Actually,
I
really.
mean, to be fair, what I do remember of them, which is only actually from Guildhorse 2, is that Palau Ojoko was the one who overthrew their dynasty and by unleashing the Scarab Plague while they were in power. So I
Right.
found that reasonably compelling once I remembered what it was, you know.
Oh yeah, I was fine with it. It was definitely funny for the first, you know, like the first thing out of their mouths is go away. And you're like, yeah, but also revenge. Like, oh yeah, no, now we're speaking the same language. Like, yes, yeah, okay. I also love the idea of using ghosts to fight a infestation based enemy, right? Like, because I mean, in general fantasy, like, yes, magic can affect ghosts, but while the Scarab Plague seems, you know, sort of magical, it's also very much a physical manifestation that, like, infects you. And so I liked that idea of like mobilizing ghosts against something that they are particularly effective against. I mean, ghosts are generally always going to be effective, but it seemed sort of smart and cool, and also, again, the appropriate because that is what killed them in life. So I liked that also as sort of a cost or a consequence of this super powerful weapon in the hands of the enemy, right? Is like it causes part of its own downfall because of you know, making an immortal ghost army that's really mad at you. Yeah, I like that. It yeah, I we so was there anything you wanted to talk about with the primeval ghosts? I mean, that segment was pretty short.
Not really, just that I thought it was cool.
Yeah. Then you go outside and friggin' Blish opens up a rift in time and a spacesuit. Really just space, but which I found funny given that fast, like they're talking about how big of a deal it is while fast travel is canonically exists. is a little weird, but he opens up a rift so that you can send an army through in theory, but you know the problems arise. I actually had a hiccup with that during the instance because I didn't realize that there was a separate prompt to continue the mission. Or not like continue, there was like a prompt to go through it as the mission, but you could just go through it because you can do that in the open world. And so I just went through the portal instead of like, quote, going through the portal in the story. And so I could not figure out what I was supposed to do for ages because I just went to the new map and there was no like story update. I wasn't in the instance part of the map that the story transports you to. I just whooshed off to the new map, which was sort of a weird interaction, but yeah, anyway, eventually I figured out what my problem was. Did that happen to you or anybody that you know, or am I very special in my usage of the portal?
I guess it wasn't as I just wasn't thinking about it as much because I was doing it. I actually got really lucky and made it. I was one of the first people to make it into Korna. Just somehow I got really lucky, and me going in with a friend, like, just our instance held while everyone else's was falling to pieces. And so actually this was the time when we were supposed to record a podcast. I was like in that instance, like, oh my God, don't crash, really running, sprinting through it as fast as possible. Don't crash, don't crash, don't crash. Oh my God, I'm in Korna. Okay, gotta get a commander tag out. People are gonna teleport in on me, like get an LFG. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. All of a sudden I looked at the clock, I was like, oh, we're supposed to record.
45
So
minutes ago.
that's what happened to me, yeah.
Yeah. But you got to Korna after actually finishing the instance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could have gotten there really fast, because it's not very long to talk to the primeval monarchs, and then you just interact with the portal instead of talking to Blish one more time. But, yeah, anyway, I just sort of had to laugh at myself that I bungled up like that, and it took me a while to figure out what I did wrong. So I actually explored a lot of the map before I could figure out why I couldn't find a story instance.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But anyway, so you go back, and this is the area where you have that weird stealth mechanic, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, the arm. Uh-huh.
Yeah. What were your thoughts on that stealth portion?
It was weird, because, like, I didn't have any strong feelings either way. I liked a few things about it. Like, I liked that it gave you some interesting tools. Like the stupid long range teleport. Is it 4,000 range or something?
It's really long, yeah.
It's completely spammable, yeah. And the thing that lets you turn into the tree, as well as like the insta kill thing. I felt like it was a really good stealth skill set, but at no point was I really challenged to make use of it. So I just kind of feel indifferent. Like, I didn't feel like I had to do any specific thing with the stealth. But I didn't, which I don't really always enjoy anyway. Kind of just want to go smash things sometimes. So it's nice to just kind of like zip around the map and do all the things that I needed to.
Yeah. I found it very odd, because on a base interaction level, it was pretty simple, right? You stun them from range, and, you know, then you one-hit kill them. And if you get into trouble, you teleport really far away. Like, ultimately, that's sort of all that really matters in the mission, right? That's the most complicated. I guess where it got a little odd for me was in towards the end part of the mission, when you meet up with Kanok and you get the bombs and you have to plant the seeds. I don't know. The way that the stealth, like the actual don't move to get seen, I could not figure out exactly what parameters made you visible, or how much, like, or how visible,
yeah,
or from what distance.
Yeah, that was
distance.
Weird, too. Sometimes there were cones, but not always.
Right. Okay, so I'm glad it wasn't just me. I wasn't, because you were just like, yeah, it's fine, it was never hard. I mean, it wasn't that hard, but I did die once, mostly just through brazen carelessness.
Oh, yeah, I died a couple times. Just, like, hey, surprise, you've been found, and now you're annihilated, okay, bye. But, I don't know, I didn't even register, because I was up again so quick that who cares?
Okay, just checking, because I was, yeah, it's just like, oh, a turret sees you from 2 miles away. And I was like, what, how? Aren't, okay. And then it was like, if you move, they will see you. And I'm like, okay, I mean, I guess I kind of understand that, but what if they have the cones? Like, will they see me with the cones if I don't move and have no heat? Or, like, mm-hmm. if... Like, I just didn't quite understand exactly what the parameters were, and I just didn't really feel like experimenting with it too much. Yeah, like, the detection mechanics were kind of odd, and planting the bombs when you had to destroy the stationary targets was, like, sometimes you felt sort of suicidal. I would just, like, teleport into the middle and place it, and then just try and whoop away. But, yeah, it was just kind of odd, but it was fine overall. I feel like there was one or two of the abilities that were sort of pointless. I still don't really know why you would bother capturing the sand dust devils or whatever.
Yeah, there were a couple abilities like that, because the second half of your skill bar just appeared when you came into contact with stuff.
Yeah.
Which was cool, like to develop skills out of contact, or like by context, but like some of them I never found in my first playthrough.
Anyway, it was odd. It was not a bad mission. I guess it just didn't quite click for me, and I can't really tell you exactly why. But it was fine, right? And then at the end of the mission, you have a big fight with a bunch of awakened, while the army sort of slowly warps through in phases. I found that phase quite easy as a necro, because you could just like keep them pulled outside of the circle, and then just like was over really fast. But that's good. I just slaughtered hundreds of little crappy dudes, and it felt good. So it's fine that it was super, that part was pretty easy. Oh, also, I just like didn't read my skills, so I didn't realize the whole disarming cannons or turrets thing or whatever.
Yeah,
Until
I felt
towards
bad
the
about
end.
that, because because part of the reason that, rushing through that instance the first time I played it, and I didn't want to listen to anything at that point. I just wanted to get through it, so I was
Right.
worried about it crashing. I didn't read my skills at all, but at the same time, I so appreciated the way they introduced them with the little tool tips that, like, it didn't have the whole description of the skill, but like. Was like, use this as a tree to hide and don't move. And so, from that short description, you immediately understand what that skill is for and why you might want to use it without having to read the skill thing.
Yeah.
I appreciated that a whole lot.
Oh, I want to ask, speaking of things they didn't explain, how do you disorient people with the teleport?
Oh my God, I had to have someone tell me because I
I'm.
had no idea.
Yeah.
You had to just th like spam the teleport on top of them, like literally on top of the character model, instead of like going back and forth between their front and back. So I tried that forever, and I finally had to ask someone because I just wasn't getting anywhere,
Yeah,
and
and I mean,
I wasn't even making progress on it.
I teleported onto them, but I just like once, and I was like, "Well, that's not it." And I just try, yeah, I could not figure it out. That was a weird achievement that I eventually just gave up on.
Yeah. If you still haven't done that achievement, I found a really good spot to do it was up like when you after you get the teleport, you need to go finish scouting and you get a little overlook over the army place. I'm not saying this is the only place to do it. Overlooking the bridge going into the front of Gandara, by the way. But what I learned is that the trebuchets and the walls also get disoriented when you spam things. So there were only one or two enemies up there, but I was getting 4 or 5 hits per disorientation because when it happened, the trebuchets and walls would also get disoriented.
That's really funny. Yeah. I didn't even know that there was a count on it. I just like because I just read the little tooltip or whatever on the bar. That like they disappear if you are no longer eligible. So boy, I really didn't know how that worked. But yeah, it was fine. Weird stealth section, new mechanics that will assuredly never be used again. Not super hard, but it was fun. It was a cool way to see a decent portion of the map in an instance. Oh, also, maybe they said it and I just didn't hear. I did not realize that there were entrances through the bramble walls
I didn't either. I
until
jumped
like
over it.
yeah, I used mounts to like go around it and I was like, this is kind of awkward. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I locked myself on the outside of it when I grew it by accident, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I'll just jump over it. That'll be fine." And then as I jumped over it and landed on my Springer, I landed right in front of the door and it opened for me. This is way harder than it needed to be.
See, I didn't even realize it until. Actually, I don't even think I realized it during that instance. I think it was in the open world afterwards. Okay. I'm glad it's not just me, though. Like, I may be stupid, but then at least I can have a friend. Or maybe we're just not dumb. It's fine. Yeah, anyway. It was decent. Boy, I'm really painting a great picture of us as a.
Yeah, this isn't we're usually pretty clever, but this isn't we didn't get off to the best start this time.
Look, it's fine, I can pretend I was drunk because whatever. I don't know. Reasons. And by that I mean drinking juice. After that, right, this is when you split up in the map where it's not in instances, but it's sort of like doing hearts, but not explicitly, right? And the things you're doing contribute to hearts, so you sort of might as well finish them while you're there. Yeah. I don't. Oh, go ahead.
Oops, sorry. I liked this because that segment is somewhat of a tradition now, right? Like go around the map and do things that are related to the hearts.
Right.
I really liked it compared to a lot of the other ones we've had. And I was talking to you a little about this earlier, but the segment where you're in the village. And you have to go around and find out how the scarabs got to this village, and you do like a little bit of exploration and stuff. I found that that was much better conveyed to me as a story than typically they are when we go to do those hearts. I think they've always relied on you to go talk to the NPCs yourself and just kind of talk to the heart NPC and learn about the area that way. But I much preferred this area where I have some context for that village and what goes on there now, and I really like it because I don't know, it's hard to explain, but because I understand the story of that village and because I was involved with it a little bit more, it means something to me where a lot of outposts, like quote unquote outposts, in Guildwars 2 don't, because I don't really know or care about anything that goes on there. Every once in a while I'll swing by to do an event, you know, but I don't know the story of those char villages out in Iron Marches, for example. You know, they're there. Don't know what goes on there.
They exist.
Yeah, but I found it a lot more compelling. And one of the cool moments in the story for me was burning the crops in that village as part of that heart, where people are yelling at you as you burn all these crops. And because I hadn't done it before, I didn't know that you could target only the scarab-infested crops, and so in my head, I had to burn down the whole field because gotta get rid of the scarabs, right? Can't let them spread.
Man,
So,
you and I were really on point with doing the exact same things on accident or not understanding, because I was probably halfway through that field before I realized that the scarabs were only in some of them and that you could like
yeah,
see
I
it.
had no idea. I burned out the whole field,
And
every
well,
single one.
so maybe this makes me a worse person, and it does, but I did figure it out about halfway, and then I chose to burn the rest of it down
Well,
just
it wouldn't look right
because.
if you didn't.
Exactly. Like I've already started this, you know, I'm gonna damn well finish it. So I
But
also
yeah,
burned down the field and I knew what I was doing for half the time.
I found that really compelling, and I hope that comes back. Like this plot thread that they're starting to weave about the commander is not the greatest person.
I don't know that that's really the plot thread that they're weaving so
Well,
much as that we're weaving it on his or her behest.
sure. Yeah, I can see that. But yeah, the we did some not so good things in the name of making sure that Joko gets out of power really quickly, in a place where he was very firmly entrenched, and some people are very, very firmly loyal to him despite all the terrible things he's done to him, to them. And I just, yeah, I found that aspect of the story pretty interesting and compelling, and I hope that continues.
I do definitely think that there is some interesting ground there, that there are adherents and followers of Joko who is very explicitly evil, but that these people are, you know, a lot of them are just normal people and they don't all do evil, beard twirly, mustache twirly evil things all the time, and they're not all, you know, mind slaves, in the ca like in the case of the Mordrem, right? Like the Mordrem, it's like, oh well, you know, they're being mind controlled, right? But you know, there is a society built around Joko, and like, yeah, he's bad and he's got to go, but it's not necessarily gonna make everybody happy. And yeah, I think that's much better and more nuanced storytelling than a lot of the time what we get. So I also quite like that. I think that is a smart observation. I did find it very funny that you literally launch supplies in cannons to other camps. I think that is a hilariously video gamey mechanic. But I am fine with it. Oh, also, at the end of that part with the scarabs in the village, where there's another statue of Joko that's sort of berating slash coaxing, you know, what's his dude to do the scarab things. You know what I'm talking about, though, right? So, to continue the trend of the episode being somewhat buggy, I was not able to interact with the statue for a solid like 5 minutes, and so Joko was really letting this dude have it for a long time, and my my thing was telling me, hey, you should destroy this thing and weaken Joko's influence. I eventually just decided that it must be bugged, but I just like sat there as the commander, you know, rubbing my chin as Joko was like, you are literally the worst, you are a useless subhuman piece of garbage, like your wife died and good, you're not even, you know, it's just like going on and on into this poor guy. And that, like, it, man, it got real funny. I'm the most dick commander this story segment, I guess. I guess that's just who I am now. Silvaris are a little salty now. I have a question. Have you played this as a human?
Yes.
I'm just wondering if the story is any different.
Played on Human Thief, and I played on... Actually, yeah, I only played the first chapter on Char. No, wait. No, I did. What did I do? You know what I did? Okay, listen. Because I'm so... Well, not because I'm bad at video games, but because I'm lazy at video games, I logged in my second account so that I could portal myself through the laser segment, and that's why I'm confused. I didn't actually do the story on my second account, but I carried myself through the story because I was too lazy to properly avoid the lasers, so I used portals.
Boy, that is pretty lazy.
You're welcome, people who didn't think of that before. You can now be on my level.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about the lasers, do you want to just move into that instance? Because I think aside from the getting to know the township, there wasn't a ton extra to say from the out in the open world portion of the...
We did say something about the Hecates, right?
No.
Okay. Hecates are there. That's the whole thing, because I wish we would have learned more about them, but that was pretty much all we learned about them, is that Hecates are there. Okay. Which was cool, because they were a Guild Wars 1 thing, and they seem to have slightly altered Hylic models, but we don't really know anything about them other than that they're being harassed by Choya. And I don't think they even showed up for the final battle after we recruited them, so good job, Hecates.
Yeah, I used to farm the crap out of them for a couple of green drops back in the day. Which, if you're not familiar with Guild Wars 1... Green was the highest rarity, sort of. Green was the unique items, which is to say they have their own names and, you know, they have specific names of items and sometimes weird stat combos. And so, but they were farmable because they were dropped and named after, like, specific boss creatures.
To give like a Guild Wars 2 analogy, it would be like if you got a piece of Ascended gear that dropped and it had a rune already in it and you couldn't change it, but it was like the best thing you could have, but it was just kind of the way it was. Except some of them had unique skins or names or interesting things.
So right, and
that was the reason you would farm them.
Much like the Ascended jewelry is named after different like NPCs and things, right? Like you might get the Karka Queen, you know, the Karka Queen's Resplendence or something, and it's like a, I don't know, tiara that's made of Karka that the Karka Queen drops, because it is the Karka Queen green item. Like, it was a really interesting mechanic, and because of the way that Guild Wars 1's maps worked, the maps were spun up as soon as you entered them as your party, and then they were only shared amongst your party, and so you could leave a map and then re-enter it and everything would be respawned and they would be spawned in the same place, and some things were slightly varied, and sometimes like the effectively champions were, you know, either not always there or were there but rotating spawn locations, or it was like one of five champions effectively. And so there was sort of a big economy built around people that could farm items solo. And you were especially incentivized to do it solo because the drop rate was the same total for the whole party. But if you did it solo, that meant that you were the only person who could receive it. And so anyway, Long story, I farmed a whole bunch of Hecates for green items when Nightfall came out because I was really good at solo farming solo farming those bosses, and my tiny guild would divide up different bosses that had in-demand green items, and we would farm them like in parallel and make a bunch of money that way. So it was good to see the Hecates. It was sad to not see anything about the Hecates, and yeah. I once again am glad that it was not just me who did not see anything about the Hecates, and that that is just how it felt to you too, I guess. Anyway, so yeah, after you go around and you meet some people and you sort of learn how some of the events work, you pretty much the next instance is the last instance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, funny story, I was planning to get the new mount before I finished the story, and surprisingly, to me anyway, the mount is much more involved to get than I was expecting, considering that all the other masteries, and all the other mounts for that matter, are pretty much you just get them right away or for getting to a certain point in the story, and then you train them to like buff them up, but you get them at sort of just the thematically appropriate time. And so I was quite surprised that you do not just sort of automatically unlock this, and it's in fact not one but I think four collections that you have to do in order.
Three, so yeah.
Is it only three?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
No, I think it's four.
And I forgot
there's
about
the
it.
First one, and then you do both the saddle and something else, I believe. And then there's the last collection once you've made it, or like once you've put the saddle on it, you have to make it a meal. I think that's the fourth one. Anyway, doesn't matter. Point is, it took more effort than I was expecting, and so I just figured, oh, I got to a point where I had to do one of the current events and also a meta event, and neither one was spawning within an hour, so I just said, oh, I'll just do one more story instance, and surprise, it was the last one. So my idea to get the mount before I finished the story was hilariously diffused by my own I don't know if it was by my own hand, but anyway, I was surprised that this was the end, even though the instances were long up to this point. It just sort of surprised me that this is the final instance. But anyway, you spawn in, and I need to pull it back up to look exactly what happens. Right, so you make your way to the Moon Fortress, which is also another iconic-ish Guild Wars 1 location. Do you have any memories of the Moon Fortress?
Not as much. Nightfall wasn't my favorite campaign at the time. I think now that I'm older, it would have been. But I just didn't care for it.
What was your favorite campaign again?
I liked Factions more. I was really weird because my idea of a good time was rolling up Factions characters, running them to Kynang City as fast as possible, and then doing all the quests in Kynang City because I loved Kynang. A lot of people thought it was like a maze and gross, but I thought that was super cool because that was an environment that I hadn't really seen explored in games before. So for me, it was a big cool deal to check out Kynang. But I did, like, I do remember the Sunspear Assault pretty fondly on Gundara, and I remember somewhat the chapter with where you go and rescue Cormyr from the prison, because there's an element of choice there, right? Like, you...
Yeah, I think at the end you decide what to do.
Yeah, I think you cannot do... I think you can go a route that's not rescuing Cormyr in the prison. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember skipping it or only having done it once. And, you know, thinking it was really cool and like, oh, how could I have missed this? I'm so glad I came back and did this on another character or something.
Yeah. I just remember it sort of had a lot of grandeur and it was a really cool aesthetic, which was part of what I really liked about Nightfall in general and Factions, to be honest. Guild Wars 1 did a lot of really cool themed environments that were not as often seen, at least in Western MMOs. Like, Obviously, Eastern MMOs tend to have, more Asian-y themes, but Kantha had like a very cool spin on Asian themes, and basically no games have spins on African themes as a large playable area. So like all the architecture and stuff in this giant moon-shaped fortress prison thing were really cool. So anyway, so when I realized that you could get there in this map, I was actually really happy about that. But I hadn't actually realized that you could get there until the instance, so I guess good on you, instance, for showing me that. But yeah, you basically go in and you get the signet, which I thought was also a really cool callback to Guild Wars 1. Boy, we're just really talking about Guild Wars 1 a lot today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I really liked that. You're like, what is this thing? And isn't it Bram that tells you it's a signet? I think he is. Anyway.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, he's like, this is something that people used to inscribe magic into and carry around with them, but nobody really does that anymore. Well, I mean, I guess while we're on the train of Guild Wars 1, fun fact, a signet, I don't know if you know this in English, a signet is like a type of ring that you use for, like, you can use it to inscribe seals or things like that. And the reason that there were signets that represented skills, not all skills were signets, but there were a fair number of signet skills, and they had a unique property that they could only be used once per, like, or they, or rather, they had a unique property that they were all free, like they had no energy cost, or basically they just had no cost, and so they just had cooldowns. And the reason that they were signets is that in Guild Wars 1's alpha, or maybe beta, all of your skills, and the reason that they explained that you could change your skills around, were magical rings that you put on, and that's why you had 8 skills, because you have 8 fingers other than your thumbs to put rings onto, and so that's why signets were thematically consistent with other skills, is because it was just a different kind of ring. But then they sort of took that lore out, even though signets remained. So it was really cool to see signets again, because Guild Wars 1 fluff. But anyway, it was a signet. I meant to go look up and see if there were any signets that it obviously was referring to, especially by the icon. It probably was a Mesmer signet. But yeah, you get this signet, which is one of the, what are they actually called? I always just call them like Z skills, because that's what mine is bound to.
Special action skills,
There you
also
go.
known as SAS.
Sass. Oh, that's good. Yeah, so you get a special action skill which lets you see through illusions. It was sure weird seeing a bunch of my character's corpses around at the beginning with all of my like legendary stuff and my Mad King's backpack and my glowing eyes and hands. Like, this was the most pimped out set of corpses the world has ever seen. As I imagine they were for many players. So I found that kind of funny. But yeah, you get this mechanic. I actually kind of hated it. Like, not in concept, but in implementation, I did not like that there was like a bit of downtime with it. Like, not a ton.
Yeah, you had to maintain it. Yeah, that was the issue. It wasn't that we had to reveal things, but the it was paced, like the duration of it and the cooldown were paced just like at the wrong timing, where you effectively had to maintain it because you were progressing through the stuff fast enough that every time it was up again, you needed it, but it wasn't always quite up. So you had these moments where you had to pause, especially like between lasers or looking at a trapdoor or something while you're waiting for it to come up. But yeah, it just something about the pacing was off. I agree.
Yeah, and so it was a really neat mechanic, and I kind of wish that it was just something that was used a little bit less and had like way more downtime, but you just were supposed to use it when it sort of made sense. But instead, it was the thing that you used all the time for the whole instance. So it was less like a, I bet there's something interesting being obscured here, and instead a, I need to ram on Z every 10 seconds. So that was a little disappointing, even though the idea behind it was pretty neat, and obviously the nostalgia factor that I just harped on about was a plus, but I did find that somewhat annoying, especially with the lasers, because you progress through and there are a bunch of lasers and it's like you're in entrapment, which may be too dank of a reference for some of our audience and or Spirit herself. I'm not sure.
Oh yeah, far too dank for me.
Yeah, do you not know that reference? Oh boy. God, when did that movie come out? You were probably like eight. It was a movie, a heist movie with Catherine Zeta-Jones and I think Sean Connery, and it had sort of an infamous, which now has been repeated by many other movies, scene of crossing through a laser grid, doing effectively gymnastics and/or like contortionist poses, with some focus on Catherine Zeta-Jones's ass and whether or not it could squeeze through the lasers. It's an old reference, but it checks out, trust me. So yeah, you have to navigate this stupid laser maze using this signet, and the lasers wane in their power, right? And so that's how you know when it's safe, but they're not gone, they're just sort of kind of transparent. So you sort of have to be watching for the timing to go, but then your stupid illusion signet would run out, and then you'd have to go again, and then half the time it would be right in the gap.
Remember I said I was lazy and I portaled myself through this thing? This is why.
I made it quite far without hitting a laser, and then I found that I had accidentally missed the very first shutoff valve in this big long corridor. And so I
No.
had to go back, and then I hit it, and then I got really salty about it. And yeah, did you actually? This brings up a question. What was the achievement for listening to all of Joko's insults? Like, how does that happen?
You had to get hit by he had different like two or three insults for each trap you could get hit by. So there's like three or four for the laser and then like three for the fire and three for the ice or something, which by the way, I completely missed the ice on my first playthrough. Did not even notice it.
Yeah,
Like
I
the
eventually noticed it towards the very end, but I did not know necessarily. Yeah, I didn't know how the achievement worked, and so I ran into the laser a bunch of times, and then I didn't get the achievement, and then I just said, I actually don't care, I'm just salty. But okay, yeah, so it was funny. His insults were actually pretty funny after a while, which I kind of loved. He, I think my. I think I kind of just love the last one that he had for the lasers. He was like, invisible light beams, signet of illusions,
Yeah.
put two and two together. Jeez. And then he like doesn't have anything else to say to you. He's like, I am burned out by how much of a moron you are. I've got
Yeah.
nothing left. Yeah, I actually thought that was really funny. But anyway, those lasers are actually really annoying, especially during the fight that happens later. Yeah, did you have anything to say before the fight? The first fight, I guess. Well, I shouldn't say that. There were a bunch of like small fights, and then there was like a sort of mini boss fight with the whatchamacallit? What's her name? The one that you worked with in the Path of Fire story, right? That looks like they're straight
Beast
out of Stargate.
Marshal Erongo.
Yeah, that one.
Olorongo. I missed at least one vowel in there, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, they look straight out of Stargate,
Yeah.
if that means anything to you.
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Boy. Well, I will send you a picture to tell you exactly what that means. Man, my references are all missing the mark tonight. This is depressing.
Yeah, we're so in sync except for the references because I'm an uncultured swine.
Mostly because you're a child, but no. I've been feeling really old lately because I just had a birthday, so
I see.
yeah. Also, this is completely far afield, but it wouldn't be Relics of War if it wasn't. I was part of a Reddit thread discussing and explaining the Y2K problem to 19-year-olds that weren't born or were
Oh
just born.
no. Oh no.
Right?
Even I remember that.
You're at least old enough to remember that. Yeah. But that was depressing. So anyway, yeah, in that fight, there are some very strong slow mechanics, and trying to jump over those permanent lasers while you are super slowed, and then they just like knock you down, and then you get up like right into it and you're still slowed. Mm-hmm. Man, I eventually just figured out to just go through the center because the beams are actually not on a considerable amount of the floor, but man, I was starting to get a little tilted at like the dumb parts of this mission. Otherwise the fight
was
fine.
I don't think those lasers needed to be there, to be honest.
Yeah, and do you have to go through the entire thing to get the achievement, or is it just through the like hallway part
just
without lasers?
The hallway.
Okay.
I had to do the instance two or three times to get all the achievements, but I've only done the fight with Joko once, so.
Well, there wasn't any lasers in the fight with Joko, but.
Yeah, I just meant the achievements, like, complete when you're done with them, as opposed to at the end of the instance.
Oh, sure. Yeah, anyway. But basically, then, Joko captures you and paralyzes you because he has super godlike powers, but then Bram breaks you free and takes your place because Bram's gonna Bram, and mm-hmm. you fight mano a mano with Joko. How did you like the Joko fight?
Man, I kind of wish I had played it again, because now I'm a little bit fuzzy on it. I liked the jumping around on the different platforms, because the floor was scarabs, which is a bit weird.
Was it? Is that what it was? Because I ignored that, because I'm a necromancer and I don't give up. Okay.
Yeah, no, I was hopping around on the, like, there was the center part of the room with the traps, like the hallways, and then around the edge there were some little platforms you could stand on, and I liked that. I liked the there was like a wall of scarabs that would rush at you, and it had a really cool sound effect on it. Like the mechanic itself wasn't anything interesting. It was just a wall that had a hole in it, but
I did like that you had to use the signet.
Rush was really cool. Yeah, that too. The revealing the different things around the room and breaking their break bar. I thought it was a really intricate and cool fight.
I meant using the signet that... on the scarab wall, but...
Oh, yeah, to find the opening.
Yeah. Like, that was the type of thing where I wish that you had less access to it, but it was only used more for things like that.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I didn't even really catch that you needed to use the signet to do the wall, because at that point I was just using it on cooldown, so...
Right.
Just wasn't even thinking about, you know, having to use it at an opportune moment. But yeah, that is really cool.
Yeah. Other than that, the fight was decent. I was really surprised that you didn't actually have to do anything. I mean, I guess that's not true. I was going to say, you didn't really have to do anything to kill the quote-unquote immortal Palawa Joko. You just sort of killed
him.
But then you don't actually kill him. He's still fine. And then Aurene eats him. Again, spoilers, but you were warned. So I guess... we didn't really kill him, so I guess that's fine, but I just have a short memory, and so I was gonna say that I was surprised by something that should not have been surprising, because it didn't happen, so it's fine. Boy, did Bram have some great lines in this instance, though. I do not like how pouty Bram often is, but he had some good one-liners, or some pretty funny commentary, so he sort of won some brownie points back from me.
I'm glad he can spell epidemic now.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. Was that...
I kind of wish it had gone the other way, and he had spelled it wrong, and everyone was just like, yeah, Bram, good job.
Good job.
It's like living up to your stereotype, but also owning it, too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I actually just loved it when he was like, yeah! Good job, Aurene! You friggin' ate him. I wish I'd have thought of that. Like, obviously that's how you kill him. I was just like, is that obviously? But I mean, you know what? Okay, it's fine. Like, that's a very Bram thing to say, and I think that's great. I thought that was super funny, actually. How grossed out everybody else was, and Bram was just like, yeah, what? Is this not the smartest, like, most logical way to do this? I don't understand your problem with this. Cracked me up. Yeah, I mean, and that's it. You killed Joko. Aurene has some indigestion or something, and you know.
Okay. Well, hold on. How did you feel about the final cutscene where Joker is like holding you and talking to you?
Okay. So. Okay, I guess there's a couple things. In case anybody missed it, I have some kind of strong eye roll whenever the villain has automatically paralyzed the hero powers. So, you know, the fact that we just had this kind of long fight and he just is like, lol, just kidding, you're paralyzed again. Sort of just was, like, pretty eye-rolly. As far as his sort of spiel... I really loved the line of like no, you aren't me, but shouldn't it concern you that everybody bought what you were selling? Like, I really liked that. I thought that was a very good sort of summary of his like point, just in one good sort of zinger. Is like you were doing what you thought was right, but blaming me, and everybody thought that sounded just like something I would do, which doesn't that just basically mean that what you want to do sounds like what I want to do? Like, I thought that was just a really good way of sort of sidestepping your morals. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not like, you're the same, but he's like, as far as everyone else is concerned, though, like, how are we different, you know? Like, it's I really liked that. I don't think he necessarily completely sold the rest of it, but I thought that was a fantastic line. I liked that a lot. It's sort of, again, speaking to our point of like not everybody's happy with the commander this chapter. What did you think of it?
I remember liking the dialogue. There weren't any super standout moments to me other than when Joko has suddenly had a middle name that we've never heard of before.
Yes.
Okay, cool. The thing that I was really interested in was the animation. I think there were some really good moments of it, like him standing up and cracking his bones back together. Like, that just like some really good movement that we haven't seen in Guild Wars 2 before.
Yeah.
Like rolling his neck around and cracking his neck and stuff. I was like, this is so good. I was really into it for that. Like watching him do these things and going, I wonder if we get that emote. But
only if you're a necromancer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just I thought it was really well presented all around, regardless of how you felt about the content.
Yeah, the presentation was pretty good. I was definitely very interested by the aesthetic style they were going for with that. It was good. And then he died, right? And
yeah, I was so into it. And then now Joko's dead, and we've had it confirmed in the AMA that followed the chapter that he is dead.
He's so. D-E-D dead.
He is likely not to reincarnate. However, I will posit a theory to you and you can agree or disagree. I find it interesting that the enemy dragons we're familiar with, right? So there was that whole thing in season 3 where we're starting to see death destroyers and death ice brood and stuff like that. Orin also being a dragon, having consumed Joko, large source of magic, could potentially take on some aspects from him.
Yeah, that's... I would wager that that's going to happen, yeah. I feel like they were... Yeah, it's... that does not seem unreasonable based on the way that we were sort of seeing the ending and the fact that the commander is basically like, yeah, but she's still Orin. It's like, yeah, but like, people are questioning it, kind of, you know. Yeah, it's I would agree with that.
So there's one more thing that I, in a related vein, with Joko being gone, one thing that I find really interesting about the Awakened is, unlike a lot of other undead in other games and stuff, is the Awakened, once they're reawakened, alive, awakened, dead, but you know, upright and moving.
Right.
Like me on Monday morning. They are alive until they're killed again. They're just under Joko's control. They're not sustained by him. So we're about to find ourselves with a population of undead people who have no master.
Yeah.
And I think that has the potential to be really cool. Theoretically. Because, I don't know if it was a mistake or not, but after I played the chapter, I went and talked to Eric, because he had also just played the chapter. we posited some tinfoil theories back and forth. I'd be curious if the aspect that, or, you know, Eren having eaten Joko, if the Awakened would feel any allegiance to her or not. Because it depends. They all retain their personalities, right? That's been established with Kos and Lonai. I wonder if the people, like, maybe the people loyal to Joko won't be interested in following her. I don't know. I don't know. I think there's some interesting theories that you could posit, interesting levers that they could pull.
Yeah, well, and what if she makes her own Awakened?
Ooh.
Well, yeah, and then we could have some ethical questions about that.
Oh, dude, what if, like, I don't know, what if Rox dies or something, and she reawakens Rox so she can, like, be part of the warband or something?
Yeah, she's like, what's wrong with this?
Oh, man. Oh, no! This could get really weird, but I'm into it.
Yeah, I'm into that. I love exploring morality, especially when it's via power given to those who would be naive or innocent, so they are clearly using it without sort of the ulterior motives of a more jaded adult type person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm all over that. So, yeah, that'd be sweet. I don't know that they'll go there, but it would be pretty cool. At this point, we've been going for almost an hour and a half now. What else do you want to put into this episode versus breaking it off for another episode?
I guess let's talk about the fractal really quick, if you don't mind, because there's a lot of stuff I want to say about it, and I thought it was really cool, but I don't think I have enough to fill an episode on it, so.
Fair. I have not played it or looked into it, so you get to talk all by your lonesome, and I will occasionally ask you stupid questions.
Okay. As I'm talking, would you do me a favor, because I definitely researched this before this, go on the Guild Wars 1 wiki and wiki Torin, Torin, and see if anything comes up?
I feel like there was a green item named after him.
It's a possibility. So the theme of this fractal is, the name of the fractal is Deepstone. It is a sealed dwarven tomb.
Is this...
Which, go on.
Sorry, I just looked it up. Torin is a bandit who has been attacking the Men of Kryta Ambassador Zane. It is literally the first quest after the pre-searing. And he used to be a gate guard before the searing.
Okay, so, well, the reason I asked that is because I saw it in the AMA or something. Somebody asked if this was Guild Wars 1's Torin, and the response they gave was nebulous, but enough to convince me that there could have been a relation there. I'm not sure that there is, but there's two NPCs in this fractal that you kind of go alongside with. One is named Torin, the other is named Kay. And you are helping the two of them plunder this tomb. They mention being from a guild and some fallout that had happened within the guild. Torin kind of went off on his own, left Kay behind, and she's trying to kind of mend that relationship. So you find sort of the standard fare of dwarven tombs, some spiders, some traps, little bit of lasers on the floor. There's one segment where you need to cross a bridge and there's wind that'll blow you off. But instead of falling to your death, you go into like a long horizontal updraft. It's invisible, but you get pushed to back to the start of the bridge rather than dying and have to start over.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool. At the end, so it's like, there's a left path and a right path at the start, right? One of them ends in a spider boss. The other one ends in a elemental boss. Oh, the elemental boss has a kind of funny mechanic. He has a tornado that he spawns and it pulls you in. And if people don't CC you out, it just pulls you off the side. Like the tornado just keeps going and you go wherever the tornado goes. So the tornado goes off the side, so do you. Which was kind of funny. We did it on T4 once with a full party, and three of us got picked up and deposited off the side immediately as everyone else ran after us going, oh, what do we do? Yeah, so you kill those two little mini bosses and you get their essence or whatever. You're teleported back to the main chamber. Actually, as you're fighting the spider starts to speak.
That's creepy.
Yeah, very. It's a deep, sort of masculine voice, and it's speaking a language that I'm not sure that we know. It might just be that I don't know it, but not anything I recognize. Kay is able to translate it. It's not Dwarvish, but the closest thing that I know of in Guild Wars lore that resembled this language to me was the do you remember the Path of the Six Gods quest where you like go around and do all the aspects in Eye of the North and then you get to the end and you're like, oh, there must be some good reward for it, and there's this woman who just talks absolute gibberish to you?
Yeah, sort of.
Okay. Yeah, it's that kind of language. There's a translatable language from Farajar Fells, I think is the name of the zone. There's a little bit of it in Guild Wars 1, and there's some of it in Guild Wars 2 as well in the Priory. I don't know if people have been able to translate this. I don't know if they've bothered, because the NPC does it for you. So I don't know if people have tried to do it, but it's a voice who says something like, I see you coming. So you get back to the central chamber, and because you've now powered up the ward, which, by the way, Kay says, this ward is not to keep people out, it's to keep something in. Which definitely means you should proceed, people. Yeah, so you end up in the central chamber and a bunch of shadow creatures start to spawn, and you can make them vulnerable with a new sass skill that you get called Light of Deldramore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So much like Light of Deldramore in the first game, it's just an AoE sort of light around you that can reveal things, including enemies and up to 10 hidden treasure chests throughout the entire fractal, which is kind of cool. I don't think there's a super big reason to hunt the chests after the first time, because you have to go off to the side paths where you wouldn't go again after you get the light, so it would take a lot of time out of it. But if you do take the time to hunt it, they do have a unique champ bag. I don't think anyone's done drop research on it yet, but it is capable of dropping at least a 20 silver junk item that's not with anything else. You can't preview the bag, so I don't know if there's any interesting drops in there other than that junk item, but I suspect there could be, so maybe something to keep an eye out for. Yeah, so you fight off a few of these shadow creatures, and then you go into a room that is a square pit that just descends into darkness. And if you use your Light of Deldramore at the right place along the edge of this pit, a path will be dragged up from the darkness. So you proceed around this room basically following the end of the path, alternating your Light of Deldramores to reveal a path for you that winds around the room. I'm not clear if it's a random path or if there's some method to the madness, but you need to reach certain, there's little orbs in the room. So you need to reach all the checkpoints before you can proceed out the other side. But yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty cool. I like that little segment. The puzzle itself isn't as great as it is thematically. Like, it's just really cool to watch like the path be dragged up from the darkness and that whole thing. And then you hop on an elevator, which is a perfectly square platform, which I'm sure, because you've played a video game before, you know that will not end well.
Right.
Yeah. So I think halfway down, you get attacked by creatures. And there's more voices from the darkness. I can't remember exactly what they say in that encounter. And you keep going down and down and down. I can't remember if the elevator falls. I felt like it did, or I felt like it was going to. I don't think it actually does, though. Eventually you reach this very, very deep bottom level, and it's an open chamber that's completely dark except for one little light in the center, with a giant vault door that you can see just beyond it. And Torin and Kay run out into the room, and Kay goes, Torin, stop, you don't have the light, but he keeps going. And he becomes possessed by this voice, which I think the boss is literally called The Voice. And he is given powers of darkness. Now, what this boss actually does, I'm not sure I can tell you. Because my biggest problem with the fractal is that it was so easy that I just kind of burned through it.
Okay.
The final encounter is very reminiscent of Thaumanova. Not in a bad way, where it feels like they're reusing mechanics or anything, but the sort of platforms that can be dragged up from the darkness. But instead of a guy being turreted in the middle and you know, running all around it, there are a lot of different adds that can raise or lower platforms. He teleports around with a break bar. I know there's one phase where he teleports to the middle, and then from all over the room, like orbs of fire, like little blue glowy fires start running towards him, and if he gets a bunch of them, he does a lot of damage to you. But yeah, honestly, I was really sad about this final boss fight because I was ready for something so epic, and the lore was building up to something great, and we just absolutely floored this guy. I have no idea what he does. But I was so into the lore about the voice. I really want to know more about it. And this has been always one of my gripes with fractals is when you... They tell a complete story, I guess, from start to finish. Like, but I want more than that. Like, they tell the story, you know, like, Kay going to the dungeon, and then you beat the boss, and actually afterward, Torin, I think, actually, I can't remember if it was Torin or Kay, one of you asked them to kill him so that he doesn't take the possession out into the world, and so if you use the Light of Deldramar on him, he'll die after you finish that final boss encounter. But yeah, that's where it ends. And I kind of want to have the moment of like, yeah, we go into the treasure vault and we get it and, you know, Kay's okay. But it's always been the thing with fractals for me where it gives you just enough to be really interested and not enough to let you know what's going on.
Right. And then there's never another, like all the fractals are independent. Yeah.
Yeah. Except for the arc where, you know, an NPC outside of the fractal has a continuous story. None of the fractals follow on from each other. So.
Right. Well, that sounds pretty cool. I should do that at some point.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. Like it's pretty easy too. Like, if you feel like you, I don't know, if you were put off by previous fractals where it was like maybe just a boss encounter that was super hard or whatever, I think this one is much more manageable for an average group.
All right. Well, was there any cast you wanted to do at the end of the episode? Because I think I'm about to pull the plug. It's been actually an hour and a half now.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think I'm good for this week.
Okay. Well, with that then, thank you for joining me as always, Spirit, and thank you anybody listening. We will be back shortly to talk about all the rest of the stuff in this patch that we did not get around to because we talked forever about the story. So, yeah, we will see you soon.
This has been another episode of Relics of Or. If you want to get in touch with us, you can check out our website and forums at relicsofor.com, email us at relicsofor@gmail.com, or find us on your favorite social media site just by searching Relics of ORR. If you'd like to join us in-game, you can send a whisper or in-game mail to SpiritFace, or drop us a note on Twitter or our website and say hi. Lastly, if you listen to the podcast on iTunes, feel free to leave us a comment and the rating you feel we deserve.